Okay, Dom, so we're going to have a look at some code. So it would be great to have a look at some examples of those typical tasks that a developer needs to do, perhaps when learning a language as well, to see how that would look in S#.
Yeah, great. So what we're going to do is we've opened up Visual Studio 2010, and we're going to be walking through a simple example, which is actually taken from someone learning F#, yeah. And they had this moment where they came up with a piece of code that they thought, wow, that's really beautiful, I can explain that to to anyone, to a domain specialist, to another programmer, it's very clear and what is going on, very clear and compositional, and we'll walk through that and use do a bit of F# along the way.
And one thing that some people might not have seen before is this part of Visual Studio. Can you say just a couple of words about that?
Right. So this is F# Interactive, and I'll do a clean reset here. So let's reset that session, and you can find F# Interactive via View. Other windows here. It's down here. Control-Alt-F is the shortcut. And it's a dynamic compiler for F#, and it uses Reflection Emit to generate native .NET code and then native code ultimately on the fly. Yeah. And as you evaluate fragments in the session, it's traditionally called a read eval print loop that we might think of it more as a sort of send eval display. It's a little bit less. You don't tend to type into the window as much as you might think when you first see this tool. The user model is much, much more that you're working on a script, which is sort of like a document that you're preparing, a bit like you work on a Word document or any other sort of thing that's sort of in progress, a spreadsheet as well to some extent. And the document will be your record of how you've solved a particular problem. Often you should structure your document so that if you run through it from top to bottom, then you'll get back to the consistent sort of state. Right. And you'll find yourself restarting F# Interactive now and then and sort of running through it clean to make sure that what you've got really captures your thinking and your problem investigation.
Okay.
We'll start by just doing a little bit of printf on, say, hello world.
Yeah.
Printf is an F# library for type-safe printing, but you can also just use the .NET formatting libraries directly. So you can do System Console write line on hello world.
And this is great, right? Because it means that someone learning F# doesn't have to learn a whole new series of libraries. They've got access to the whole .NET framework.
Right, and not only have they got access to the framework, but they can sit. You can sit down with a script, which you can access just by sort of Control-N in Visual Studio. You can come down here, create a script, F# script file, and bang, you've got yourself a new script to play in. And In any F# context, but particularly the script context, you can just use these .NET components and start playing with them directly. You know, if you want to make a beep, you can make a beep. You can start. Just find the library, namespace, and you get this feeling that you're often playing with or experimenting with a particular .NET component. I think this actually is one of the real roles that F# can serve today. That if you wanted to sit down and explore a component that somebody else has written, and you've got those, you know which object is the root object you have to create, and then everything kind of leads from that, then sit down and play with that. Or you say maybe you're playing with a web service, for example.
Right.
You create your DLL, it gives you access to the web service, and you just open up a connection to it and say, hey, what does this thing do for me? And you play, and it's quite fun, quite playful, quite explorative. Yeah.
And it's that exploration, that theme that we discussed earlier. Yeah. It's the whole exploration of the problem domain in this in this window.
Okay. So we've got our right line. We'll put this back here. Now we can use other .NET libraries. For example, to do visualization, you might use Windows Forms, or you might also use the WPF controls. I tend to use a mix of the two. So let's create ourselves a new form. We're going to go visible equals true and topmost equals true here. Put a little new on that. So there's our form. So as I said, you start with an exploration and then start to make it, you start to work on your code a little bit.
Right.
So maybe you cut out this out and you put open at the top, which is the F# equivalent of using. And it's equivalent code. So now we want to start to investigate what we can set on a form. And one of the things we can set is the text. So, yes. And you can see that we've set the title on the form here.
It's certainly refreshing not having to go through the whole, you know, compile, run, F5, every time you do this, and you can just install the domain.
Yeah, you can use it to explore software components, you can use it to prototype new algorithms and then write the test cases for those new algorithms. Yeah. You can use it to sort of develop unit tests on an existing C# component.
Right.
I think that's a really strong use of F# is to people who just need to do type-safe testing of existing code.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll get rid of this now, and we're actually going to use a helper script here, which opens up one of these windows, but it also defines a little function called show. And the purpose of the show function is that it allows us to show any F#, any piece of F# data in a window over here. It does a little bit of formatting work on the data. So we can, for instance, take the value of the numbers from 0 to 99 as an F# list, and we show those and we have it displayed over here. So let's create ourselves some more data. So we're going to create ourselves a random number generator. Random here. So for instance, we can open up the random and create ourselves a random number generator and generate a random number and just keep doing that and see the random numbers coming through. Okay, so just my little cheat sheet down below. So let's take for I in 0 to 1,000, we're going to generate a new random number. We're going to show that value. Okay, so one thing I've been using here is this pipeline operator, which is very popular in F#, that lets you take some value and pipe it into some particular function. It's just like going show on this value, but it lets you generate data and then, you know, well, send it somewhere or do some tail end of things that you need to actually do some sort of visualization on the data. So now here we've generated the numbers from 1,001 random point numbers, random numbers, and we're just displaying them in the list over here. Okay. So similarly, we might generate a random integer, and then that's random integer from 0 to 99.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Great. So we've got ourselves a list of floating point numbers and a list of random floating point numbers. Okay, great.
Okay.
Right, so the code we're going to look at here is this moving average code.
Right.
So this is to say, we've got a set of floating point numbers, and we want to take, well, what's the average over the last 3 days for the three elements in the sequence?
So it's a
moving average across the sequence. So let's take a look at the solution to this problem. So first of all, the first thing we're going to do is take windows of the floating point sequence. So let's take a look at this on the whiteboard. So here's our sequence of numbers here. Okay. And it's very typical in functional programming that we have these highly compositional operations. So we work on a sequence of data and sort of highly reusable elements of what you can do with this kind of shapes of information.
Right.
And so this is going to take windows of the data. So let's say we have a window size of 3. Then the first element, we're going to get a new sequence, which is going to contain these 3 elements as the first element. And then the next element is going to be these 3 elements. And the next element is going to be these three elements. Okay. Like that. Okay.
Right.
So it's a sliding set of windows
yep.
along the sequence of data. Okay.
Okay. So this is a built-in operator in the F-sharp standard libraries, seek.window.
Okay. Returns a sequence that yields sliding windows of containing elements drawn from the input sequence. Each window is returned as a fresh array.
Right. Okay, so that's great. So now that we've got... Let's experiment with that and just check that it's doing what we think. So let's take the L0 sequence, which was, if we remind ourselves, that was this. So it's 0, 1, okay. 2, 3, 4.
That's the first list, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll take those in windows of size 3. And we'll show those windows.
Okay, great. Okay.
So, yeah, 0,
1, 2, 1, 2,
yep.
1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 4, 3, 4, 5.
Great, so, great. And yeah. We could do the same on the random random sequence.
Indeed.
Okay, great. Right, now for each of these arrays that we have, we want to add them up.
Okay.
So that's very simple. So for each of the arrays, so seek.map, we want to make a new value. We want to take the array and we want to transform it to a new value. Okay. So we just add up that
right.
array, so array.sum. On that array. Okay, so let's do that. So we do it on L0 here, and we'll show those. Right. And this looks good. 3, 6, 9, 12. A good nice arithmetic right. progression through the through the sequence. And now, we want to divide these by the length of each one to get an average, because it's average over 3.
Yeah.
And so the last thing we're going to do is to do a map here. So for each sum, which is we call S, we take S and we divide it by 3.0 here.
Okay.
3.0. And we show that, and then we get the average coming out. And if we can go back to our original... original list, we'll see that average. Now, if we take a longer sequence of windows here, then we have to divide by 30 here.
Yep.
Okay. Then, of course, the averages that will be converging, because we're taking longer sequences, okay. The averages are converging closer to the 50.
And what I love about this is actually your thought process is actually mapping extremely well onto the way you're working.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
As you think through the problem, those map into a series of functions that you compose together using the pipe operator.
Yes, and all of this is immensely reusable as a set of operators. Now, maybe that there are, of course, more efficient implementations of the moving average. We should say that up front. And it's important to realize that part of the F-sharp methodology would be being able to take something like the moving average function. And if necessary, if it is the performance critical part of your code, then write the more efficient implementation, which may be more imperative, and that's fine. It may be more object oriented, something keeping you more much more of an accumulator state as it's going through.
Okay.
and refining this function. But the actual signature of the function may not change at all. It will still be a sequence of floating point numbers coming out the end. But that process of refining from thinking through to final code can be part of the F-sharp methodology as well. Okay. Great. So I thought for the next example, what we're going to do is take a look at working with some online data stream.
Okay.
So in this case, we generated our own stream of floating point numbers and we worked with that instead. It's much more common that you'll be getting data from the outside world, right?
Okay.
So in this case, we're going to be working with Twitter,
right?
The kind folks at Twitter do provide a subset of the stream of tweets coming through the Twitter service.
Yeah.
Anybody who's got a Twitter account can access the subset of what we call the fire hose of tweets.
Yeah.
So we've loaded ourselves up a little helper class written in F#, which allows us to access, given a username and password, allows us to access this subset of tweets coming through. It's not just their tweets; it's the public.
It's the public in general. Yeah.
So this is a lovely little object here, a beautiful bit of F# object-oriented programming. Because one of the key things that works very well in F# object-oriented programming is that you can create these simple you create simple, elegant types which encapsulate some exterior process. I mean, this is standard methodology, but for some reason, F-sharp in particular excels at creating simple, reusable components.
Yes.
With your object-oriented programming.
Right.
So you can see this Twitter stream sample gives us a constructor here, username and password, gives us an object here. And with that object, we have two members. We can stop listening, or we can listen in to the event of new tweets, and we can also just press the stop listening button.
Okay.
So we're disconnecting. Okay. And this is just an event, just like a normal .NET event, which gives us back a stream of strings, and these strings are actually XML blobs representing each of the tweets.
Right.
So we've created ourselves a Twitter stream, and we're going to add our show function here. So what are we going to do here? We're going to listen in, and what are we going to do with that XML blob? We're just going to send it to the show function here.
Yeah.
So as you can see, we're getting the tweets coming through here. The world is as busy as ever in tweeting away. You can see the IDs coming through here. So we're not getting every tweet in the world. We're getting every 100th tweet or something.
Okay.
It looks like.
Wow.
And a fair bit of information of what the world is doing. And we can stop listening to that.
Okay.
Another way we could have written that is to pipe this into the event.add function here. Okay. So then we're back on again. Now, in the previous example, we were looking at this floating point sequences of data.
Okay. Yep.
So those are what IEnumerables in .NET, or arrays, IEnumerables in .NET. And now we're dealing with what Eric Meyer's way of characterizing it is, instead of you taking the data one element at a time, it's much more me throwing the data at you.
Okay.
And so each time I throw, in this case, we're polite enough that we give you time to catch.
Right.
Okay, you catch it and do something with it, like this display on the screen. Yeah. But before we throw in the next one, so there's a protocol between Twitter, I mean, the standard TCP protocol and the like, which just means that stream of data is just coming in a linear, ordered fashion that we can throw in a new and raise this event each time a new tweet comes in.
Okay.
Okay. So, but what it means is it's still a sequence of data, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's still a sequence of, in this case, events that are coming in.
Right.
And this is important because all the conceptual tools you have for working with sequences, IEnumerables, you can also do the same thing with events, more or less. Okay, with sequences of events. It doesn't quite, because we're dealing with an infinite sequence of tweets, it doesn't quite make so much sense to like sum something.
Right.
But you can do an incremental sum across. Okay, so you will add one. You can also do windows, like we said, of tweets. If you think there's some relationship between like the you want windows of 100 tweets and you want to search those for some kind of relationship.
Right.
So, very important that the same set of conceptual tools are available. So, for instance, one of those conceptual tools is this notion of mapping, which we saw before. That we're going to take some function here, which we're going to apply to each tweet, and then we're going to look at the results. So the tweet comes in, apply some function, and it comes on.
Right.
And in this case, the function is parse tweet here. And you can see the parse of the tweet here.
Okay.
And it's taken, we can do a Visual Studio F12 go to definition here. It's a little bit of XML programming using the .NET XML processing libraries, X documents and the like, to change the string into this class.
Okay.
This F-sharp, what we call F-sharp record type, which is just a simple syntax for a class.
Right. So we've taken an XML document and we've turned that into a structure of class.
Yeah, that's right. Just grab the different elements here, the user text, etc., created that, and put it into a type format. Okay. Right. So we'll stop listening there. Just to mention, the parse can fail. If it succeeds, we return a sum value here, and if it fails, we return a none value to indicate the failure.
Okay.
So the next thing we're going to do is we're only going to choose the ones that succeed. Okay, so again, it's a standard F-sharp operator, choose.
Okay.
I stopped listening, I'll start again. Okay, there we go.
Yep.
And the difference here is that the ones where the parse failed get thrown away,
just
select out the ones that actually succeed.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the next element of the processing that we're building here. Okay.
So what we're going to do now is, along the way, we're going to use this scan operator.
Okay. And this scan operator is this incremental analysis of this stream. So we have a tweet coming in. You want to record some information in this sort of state that's getting accumulated, yeah, and then process it on. Okay. And then the next one comes in, you record some information and you add it to some, say, some table or some histogram or some sort of something. Okay. And so we're going to incrementally accumulate that as we go. And so what we're going to do is actually build up what's called a multi-map, which we're going to index by the username, and for each username we're going to have the tweet. And we start with the scanning state starts with this empty multi-map. Okay, so we've done that here, and you can see the map that's being built up of the various, I think this one might be spam somehow, this triple O,
I think it might.
Tejamargo, which is interesting in itself. We can see the various tweets indexed by the user.
Right.
Quite a lot of information there. So let's show a window. So let's pull this down and stop this thing. And this time we're going to do the same scan.
Okay.
And instead of showing the full user map, we're just counting the number of unique users who have been sending tweets.
Okay.
So you can see we've just got above one here.
Okay.
So somewhere along that, someone's tweeted more than once.
Yeah.
And that could be somebody just entering, or it could be a spam service of some kind. Who knows? That's sort of up to other people to sort out. But that may be the analysis you're trying to do, spam kind of analysis. One line we did here was every 10. Okay, so we talked about sequences of data, and here we're just going to throw away every. We're only going to look at every 10th element in the sequence, which is why we see the users ticking up in roughly groups of 10. Okay, great.
And this would actually be quite a hard problem to answer. If we wanted to know some information about the number of unique users tweeting over a given window, that might take a reasonable amount of code for us to investigate that problem. But it's great that we can just talk about that and talk you through.
We could start to investigate all sorts of other problems from this point. You start to think about the problem and less about the coding. It's much more, what analysis do we actually want to do here? And then you might go away to the whiteboard for quite a while and try and work out, what's the right spam detection algorithm that we're using here? Okay, so what we're doing now is we're actually splitting the words up that are in the status messages in the tweets. So this words here is a very simple function, just to split words. We've got to try that out here, words. All the king's horses. Those. Okay, so great. The string got split with various entries here.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to choose the successful paths of the tweets. We've done that. We're going to map across each one. So for each one that comes in, we're going to do something to it. What are we going to do? We're going to extract the words from the status field.
Right, okay.
And then so we've got the set of words coming through for each tweet, and we're going to just throw them at the show function here.
Let's do this.
Right, so great, tweets coming through. We've got various languages. You can see lots of different languages, Chinese and Japanese scripts coming through.
Yeah.
A lot of Spanish comes through as well. So let's stop this thing here. And now what we're going to do is parse the tweets, get the words, and build an incremental histogram of the words. Okay. That's just counting how many times each word appears. We only want to visualize every 20, so we just don't get too much overload here on the user interface.
Yep.
And we only want to take the top 100 elements of each histogram, because we don't want to show the tail end, and we want to show this here.
Great. Okay, there we go. Let's redo.
Get all sorts of things coming up in Twitter.
But this is great, but this is now distilling, you know, what is an enormous quantity of information into actually real data here. So
right.
Yeah.
Walk up stop.
Right, okay,
retweet. Yeah, we know we're looking at Twitter here. Spanish is okay, is here. Yeah. Shows you everyone in Spanish. So let's say what you can start imagining the analyses we might do here. We could leave this running over the course of a day.
Yeah.
And we could see how the language I'm sure it's not too
around.
Yeah, we could look at, get some standard dictionaries, try and categorize the words according to which language they belong to.
Let's start building up graphs of when people are tweeting in a particular language as the day.
As the globe turns around, you can. I'm sure there will be a standard pattern that gets around as the cycles of the languages come and go.
And it would actually be very easy to do to actually answer that question using this just a couple more functions on the end of this.
That's right. You may need to incorporate a couple of extra data sets, like dictionaries from different languages, or some engine to categorize words. You may also be, if you can isolate out the Spanish words, you may be able to work out the average age of users, or the histogram of users coming in based on the kind of language that's being performed. And is it useful?
Well, it's going to be useful to some people.